It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a quick heads up here on our programming. Join us this evening for a special report with our partners at PBS Wisconsin. We hear from Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates Daniel Kelly and Jill Karofsky. That's ahead of the state's April 7th primary. And then we join Here and Now for a recap of this week's news in Wisconsin. That's tonight at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we're talking about crisis communication amid the pandemic and how to talk frankly to the public. The CDC says in its guidelines that clear, accurate, and timely communication is key to keeping the general public informed about the pandemic. Have you seen conflicting reports, conflicting information about COVID-19? Have you encountered misinformation or misleading information? Have you had to convince a loved one that the information they had was unfounded? We're at 800-642-1234. Dominique Brossard is a professor and chair of the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison, where she studies science and risk communication. Dominique, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate. Glad to be here.
There is so much information that we're getting all at once. It's coming from all directions. And in a crisis like this, how do experts communicate the severity of the risk and actually convince people to take certain steps to protect themselves?
Yes, this is exactly the question we should ask ourselves. The main thing in this kind of crisis is to be consistent across sources of information. And as the CDC says, clear, concise, accurate, and transparency when you transmit the information is really key.
Yeah, and so in terms of how to get widespread behaviors, such as social distancing, getting people to do everything and be on the same page about it, what type of communication must you give to people? How do you do that convincing?
Yeah, so it's difficult to convince people to change their behavior, particularly if the behavior you're asking them to adopt, such as physical distancing and so on, is a complicated one because it generates problems in the house, at work, etc. So what you need to do when you communicate about this kind of behavior is making sure that it's relevant to people's life, that they realize that what they're doing is for the safety of loved ones, for their community. Appeal to some emotions that will resonate and make them realize that at the end of the day, we are all on this together. Just by staying very dry and very disconnected from people's life will not work.
So let's look at facial masks for a moment. The CDC and the Surgeon General had said that healthy people didn't need to wear surgical masks and that wearing one wouldn't prevent COVID-19. But people bought them anyway. They bought them in droves online. And now we're seeing shortages in hospitals. And then other experts came out and argued that universal mask wearing was the right tactic. So help us understand those mixed messages there.
Yes, and I think that was a good and excellent example of a communication fiasco, because if you want to confuse people, obviously giving them information that doesn't match is going to increase the confusion and to some extent increase the worry of the people that are confronted with this information. So in the case of the mask, what happened is that people realize that something is happening that's very scary and it's a disease. And most of the time, masks are worn in hospital and so on, particularly on TV shows, right? Mm. If we think of Grey Anatomy and so on. So the natural reaction will be when you are confronted with something that's unknown, uncertain, and scary, is to do anything you can to protect you. And it may be even buying toilet paper for that matter, because you are scared to run out of it. But in the case of the face masks, indeed, people believe their own instincts as far as what it meant to protect themselves and others, so they rush to buy the mask. And to some extent, you know, logic says that indeed masks work to protect people, right? Like that's like the logic. But is the same logic then say having an umbrella protect people even if it's not raining, or putting sunscreen works if you don't have sunshine? So yes, masks work if you are around people that are sick. But if you practice good physical distance, 6 feet between you and other people, if you are not around people that are sick, masks are not necessary. So I think that type of messaging would have been much useful to convey to the American people from the starting point.
Yeah, because as you mentioned there, people are trusting their gut feeling at first. They're trusting their instincts. Is there anything that public health agencies could do or could have done to prevent the hoarding?
Well, you know, several experts had actually claimed the same thing at some point. He's saying that you have to be clear of why you're asking people to do certain things. So we are going to adopt behaviors because we believe that the consequences of adopting the behavior are worthwhile. So if we can convince people that physical distancing is going to keep our community safe, they will do it. If we convince them that we will run out of those masks and that the medical community needs them when they are in the healthcare setting, then that would work. But, you know, like just saying that people don't need the mask was not the best way to handle the situation.
We're talking with Dominique Broussard, a professor of life sciences communication at UW-Madison. We're looking at crisis communication and how the public officials are handling this with their messaging to the American public about the pandemic. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. Have you seen conflicting information out there about COVID-19? Where did you read it? Where did you hear about it? Have you noticed more misinformation or misleading information in this time of the pandemic? And how do you process it? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take a call on this now. Let's go to Tim, who's joining us from Birchwood. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
I was just calling because at my workplace, a week ago, I showed symptoms and didn't go to work on one day and called in, and they told me, I told them I had symptoms, but I felt I could work. So they told me, go ahead and return to work. You know, the symptoms weren't on the list, but my symptom was a sore throat and a slight cough. And I had called Marshfield. They told me maybe on the first day that I should call Marshfield Clinic, and I got the same information from Marshfield Clinic that the sore throat and the slight cough wasn't enough
to merit anything further.
Sure.
Yeah. So how do you feel about the communication you had between the clinic and also what your employer told you?
Well, I feel I was misinformed, that I should have took the 14-day quarantine, and because I still have the symptoms, and I returned to work, and other people are leaving and missing a day or two and returning to work, and I feel that the employer, you know, isn't protecting us enough against what's going on. People are leaving, worried about it,
Tim,
and returning to work.
Tim, do you feel like you have pressure to show up at work? Do you feel pressure to be there?
Yes.
Yeah.
They say our business is essential, and nobody there can see it. I believe that, you know, as we return to work, we're a lot more chance of spreading this virus.
Well, Tim, thank you for sharing that situation. Dominique, what do you hear there as Tim worked with his employer, but also the clinic, Marshfield Clinic?
Yes, and I think Tim raised an extremely important point, and we haven't talked enough about it, I think, is what happens to employees that are in essential businesses and are to some extent in between their employers, their family, like information from doctors and so on, and how do they negotiate all these type of information coming from different part of the community. And I think, I commend Tim on wanting to protect his family, himself, his community. This is something that's extremely important. And I think local officials have to think in terms of sending clear guidelines to businesses that stay open in how to make sure, you know, like the employees are safe, and by the same token, their families and such that are in contact with them. Because this is to some extent lost in all the discussion. We are talking a lot about we need to be physically distancing ourselves. But what happened to people that go to work is something that we need to really think about.
Tim, thanks. Let's go to Karen now in Janesville. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I would like to ask, when the stores have been very nice about letting seniors come early before anyone else, but when there's so many people there and you can't be 6 feet away from someone, how is that not dangerous or not spreading?
Karen, thank you for that question. And Karen's referring to the special hours that some grocery stores and other pharmacies have set for seniors to come in and do their shopping. Dominique, what about those messages there?
Yeah, and Karen is exactly correct. We do have a wide range of conflicting information in that context as well. And I think some stores have been better than others, you know, where they put signs on the floors to make sure that people know how close they are to each other, and other stores have not done that. I think there needs to be a push from local public health officials to make sure that the stores comply, to put in clear signs so people know exactly how they can keep themselves safe while shopping.
We're looking at communication in times of crisis with Dominique Broussard, a UW-Madison Life Sciences communication professor. She studies risk communication. Threats can be abstract or can seem abstract until they become personal. When did you realize how risky COVID-19 is? What drove the message home for you? Be part of this discussion, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll talk more in a minute with Dominique Broussard right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The CDC says any public health emergency presents significant risk communication challenges, and a pandemic, it's no different. It provides federal resources for health educators who do community outreach. So what has been the most helpful source of information for you when it comes to protecting your health and doing what you can to protect the health of others in this crisis? When you've disagreed with someone about the facts, what did you do? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Dominique Broussard is a UW-Madison Life Sciences communication professor, and she stays with us. Let's go to Timothy now, joining us from Superior. Hi, Timothy.
Hi, ma'am. How are you doing today?
Doing well. What would you like to add?
So I'm a small business owner. I've got three locations in northern Wisconsin. And what's really hard is the lack of communication from the government. Also, you know, dealing with, yes, these stimulus checks are going to be great and helpful, but until the government offers some sort of debt freeze, and I'm not asking for them to take my payment away, but just put it on the back end of my loan, because I have to, you know, it's really tough for me because I have to balance my employees' health with having to pay my bills. So I feel like I have to force my employees to come to work. So in the meantime, I've had two employees leave because they're scared. I've had to institute hazard pay for my current employees just to stay to work, reduce hours. And it's just a very uncomfortable feeling. You know, I've implemented multiple policies and procedures on my own without any government
guidance.
You know, indication, guidance. Every person that comes through my door gets hand sanitizer. Every time someone leaves, the counters get all wiped down. We abide by the 10 people rule, the 6 foot rule as much as we can, but it's a tough situation. I just wish the government would talk about a debt freeze rather than giving this money out. You know, I don't want a free month of rent. So I just put it on the end of my loan and then I don't have to stay open.
Timothy, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Dominique, Timothy is making really difficult choices now for himself and his employees who he cares about. And he's feeling really alone in this. And a lot of it has to do with communication.
Yes, exactly. And I would like to thank Timothy for all the efforts he's put in trying not only to keep up on a business that's essential, so that's helping all of us, but also making sure that his employees are safe as well. That actually outlines the complexity of this kind of crisis. The problem is that we know that it is a health crisis, and the first instinct of everyone is to communicate about health. But in crisis, health, you know, dimensions will have consequences for business, will have consequences for education, will have consequences for all the stakeholders that are involved. And that means that in crisis management, technically, and that means that when we are prepared to face them, we need to have a process for all those involved, for all the stakeholders, because it's our duty in terms of, when I'm saying as far as the government is concerned, it's our duty to make sure that people feel they are in control and they have the means to address a situation that's extremely complex. And only clear communication guidelines and content that are transparent and consistent, that take into account everyone that's involved, all the roles that we play, including the media, by the way. The media has a big role to play in actually giving very good science-based information that's consistent. So this has to be the case for all of us.
Yeah, we've certainly felt that weight as we try to verify every single thing that we say, that we put out there, knowing that it certainly has an effect. Let's bring in David now in Ironwood with thoughts on this. Hi, David.
Yes, I think people just need to pay more attention to the facts and stuff. It's just, you know, I mean, there's a lot of young people say, well, it's not going to really affect them. But, you know, it will affect the older folks. And, you know, when I was younger, I used to be a great relationship between me and my grandfather and grandmother and stuff. I mean, some of the people don't even know their older folks or whatever. And the same thing with a lot of older folks. They're voting.
Yeah.
Oh, climate change is not going to hurt us.
David,
who cares?
Yeah, David, thank you for the call. And I think he's getting at here that people might feel invincible, and no one is invincible with COVID-19.
Yes, exactly. And COVID-19 represents exactly what a risk issue represents when it generates fear, or potentially it generates, you know, like incredulity. The problem that we have is like we really don't see this virus. And right now, you know, we keep on talking about the fact that we want to prevent its spread. But a lot of communities right now, and thankfully, we hope that it's going to continue that way, do not know someone that has died from the virus or does not know someone that has clear symptoms. So it seems very abstract, and it seems that it's not really real, that we're fighting something that's unknown and not easy to track. And that's how people react to these kind of things. They tend to have a hard time actually taking it seriously until it matters to them. And the caller actually brought up a very important point. So those youngsters that have grandparents that they like, for them, it's going to be useful to remind them, hey, you know what? You are in charge of protecting those folks. For other youngsters, it may be another message that's going to resonate. It may be protecting their mother. It may be protecting their best friend. It may be making sure they have jobs in 6 months because we want to have an economy that you know, that is still afloat. So the key is, though, to find something that resonates with people's feelings to make them realize that at the end of the day, we are in this all together.
We're talking with Dominique Broussard, looking at crisis communication. She's a professor of life sciences communication at UW-Madison. Let's take another call in this. Nick is here from Madison. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a little explanation why the cases will increase because they haven't done enough testing. I went on vacation. I was in Spain for 8 days, France for 4. When I got back, 2 days later, I started getting symptoms. 4 days later, I was sicker than a dog. I called my doctor's office over a week and a half period to get tested. And I also called Dane County. Each time, I was given excuses. Of not needing my test. One was I didn't come from a country of concern. I didn't. Two, I had a dry cough, and I wasn't bringing anything up. And when I called back, I said I was bringing tons of stuff up from my lungs.
Nick, how... Yeah, oh, Nick.
Let me close out here. And I asked, finally I asked, what would it take for me to get tested? And they said, if you're home and you can't take care of yourself anymore, have someone drive you to the emergency room. That was when I could get tested.
Well, Nick, thank you for sharing your story. I'm hoping you're doing so much better. Dominique, it seems that we're hearing so many different stories about how communication is critical and communication is really difficult.
Yes, exactly. And I think the testing situation is another one that's very complicated. And thank you to the caller. I hope he's feeling better now. And there is that idea that going back to the point we were outlining before, what makes this complex crisis communication context, you know, difficult to communicate? In this case, we don't like unknown. We like to feel in control. We like to know what's ahead of us. We like to have clear answers. We like to know exactly when this will all end. Well, the thing though, we don't know all those answers. So what we need right now from the public health officials is to be clear about the uncertainty, is to be clear to say what they are working on, and they're working on vaccines, and they're working on getting masks, and they're working on getting all those test kits ready. So this is certainty. We know that all this happened. I think it's important to make the public realize what we know and what we're doing and the things that we don't know yet, because this is something that also generates trust. We cannot test everybody right now, but we would like to know what kind of disease we have if we have it, right? But we cannot, because the fact is that there's not enough tests. And when we have a flu in general, we stay at home, right? We don't get tested, but it's completely understandable that people want to know what they have. But the reality is that the government does not have enough tests.
So Dominique, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dominique Brossard, a professor and chair of the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.